Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Simple Sabotage Field Manual is a compact, famously practical handbook produced during World War II by the United States Office of Strategic Services, the wartime predecessor to the CIA. Written for ordinary people operating under occupation or inside hostile organizations, it outlines how small, low-risk actions can quietly disrupt efficiency, morale, and decision-making without the need for explosives or dramatic acts. The manual has endured because it focuses on universal organizational weaknesses: bureaucracy, meetings, miscommunication, bottlenecks, and timid leadership. Modern readers often approach it as a historical artifact, but many also find it an unusually clear map of how systems fail from the inside when incentives and habits turn unproductive. This edition is typically read as a window into clandestine thinking and wartime psychology, showing how strategic goals can be pursued through everyday behaviors. It is brief, direct, and procedural, making it easy to analyze for lessons about resilience and organizational design. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, wartime purpose and the logic of low visibility disruption. A central idea of the manual is that sabotage does not have to be dramatic to be effective. Instead of focusing on high-risk attacks that require expertise, it emphasizes small acts that blend into normal life and appear accidental or procedural. The logic is strategic. Minor disruptions repeated across time can slow production, degrade coordination, and force an enemy organization to spend attention and resources on prevention and repair. This approach also lowers the barrier to participation, because it assumes the saboteur may be untrained and operating in a dangerous environment where exposure is catastrophic. The manual frames disruption as a methodical practice, identifying points where systems are most vulnerable: routines, handoffs, scheduling, and approval chains. It also highlights the value of plausible deniability, encouraging actions that look like ordinary mistakes, overcautious compliance, or bureaucratic friction. For modern readers, this topic functions as a primer on asymmetric influence and the way complex systems depend on trust and smooth cooperation. It demonstrates that the most impactful leverage often comes from targeting process reliability rather than physical assets, and it reveals how organizational fragility can be amplified by tiny, consistent deviations from best practice. Secondly, how bureaucracy and procedure become weapons. The manual devotes considerable attention to using an organization's own rules against it. Procedures, forms, approvals, and compliance checks are meant to ensure quality and accountability, but they can also be turned into tools for delay and confusion when followed in the most rigid, literal way. The core mechanism is simple: when people insist on exhaustive documentation, multiple signatures, and strict adherence to formal channels, throughput collapses and decisions stall. This is not about breaking rules, but about over-applying them, escalating trivial issues, and routing work through the slowest possible path. The manual treats bureaucracy as a predictable machine. If you add steps, you add time, and if you increase the number of people involved, you multiply opportunities for disagreement and rework. Readers can also interpret this topic in reverse, as a guide to organizational hardening. It reveals where process design becomes brittle, how excessive control creates bottlenecks, and why clarity of authority matters. The broader lesson is that any system reliant on paperwork and permission is vulnerable to deliberate inefficiency. Whether you are studying intelligence history or trying to improve a modern workplace, the manual's procedural sabotage techniques highlight the importance of streamlined governance and disciplined prioritization. Thirdly, meetings, committees, and decision paralysis. Another major theme is the sabotage potential embedded in group decision-making. Meetings and committees can be useful for alignment, but they are also natural habitats for delay, ambiguity, and diluted accountability. The manual describes how to increase the number of meetings, broaden agendas, prolong discussions, and refer decisions to subcommittees, all of which slows action while appearing cooperative. It also points to tactics such as insisting on perfect consensus, revisiting settled questions, and emphasizing minor objections until momentum evaporates. The underlying insight is that groups often struggle with speed and clarity because responsibility is shared and social dynamics reward caution. When fear of blame is high, organizations drift toward endless discussion rather than decisive execution. For readers today, this topic doubles as an organizational diagnostic. If progress repeatedly stalls, the problem may not be talent or strategy, but governance habits that convert every choice into a debate. The manual's focus on meetings also shows how time becomes a strategic resource, waste enough of it, and operational effectiveness declines without any visible breach. In constructive terms, it encourages leaders to define decision rights, set firm time limits, document outcomes, and protect execution time from performative coordination. Fourthly, human factors: morale, competence, and everyday miscommunication beyond procedures. The manual recognizes that organizations run on people and that human performance can be undermined through subtle social and communication failures. It highlights the fragility of morale and the way confusion spreads when instructions are unclear, priorities shift, or feedback loops break. Small actions like passing along incomplete information, creating uncertainty about responsibilities, or fostering minor interpersonal friction can compound into real operational losses. The manual also points to the impact of assigning tasks poorly, delaying responses, and encouraging habits that reduce craftsmanship and attentiveness. The key is that many failures look like ordinary workplace problems rather than deliberate acts. This section is valuable for understanding how trust and clarity are core infrastructure. Once people suspect that coordination is unreliable, they add protective behaviors, double-checking, hoarding information, seeking more approvals, and avoiding ownership. Those behaviors further slow the system, creating a self-reinforcing decline. Modern readers can extract a mirror image lesson to build resilient teams. Leaders must cultivate clear communication, timely decisions, and psychological safety while keeping roles and standards unambiguous. The manual's human factor lens makes it an unexpectedly sharp study of organizational psychology, showing that productivity depends as much on social coherence as on equipment and plans. Lastly, operational security and the discipline of looking normal. The manual stresses that effectiveness depends on remaining unnoticed and that the safest disruption often resembles routine error, ordinary caution, or strict compliance. The emphasis is not only on what to do, but on how to behave so that suspicion is minimized. This includes avoiding patterns, blending actions into legitimate duties, and ensuring that any negative outcome can be attributed to chance, misunderstanding, or standard process. The broader principle is operational security protect the actor by keeping methods simple, avoiding unnecessary communication, and reducing the number of people who could connect actions to intent. As a historical document, this topic illustrates how intelligence organizations thought about risk management for civilians in hostile environments. As a contemporary analytical tool, it shows how difficult attribution can be in complex systems. When outcomes have many causes, intent is hard to prove, which makes low-level disruption especially potent. For readers interested in organizational resilience, this topic reinforces the need for monitoring that focuses on process health and anomalies without creating paranoia. It also highlights ethical reflection. Understanding these methods can be used defensively to improve controls and culture, but it also reminds readers that influence tactics can be misused. The manual remains relevant because it explains, in plain terms, how normality itself can be a cover for impact. In conclusion, this book is best for readers interested in intelligence history, World War II strategy, and the mechanics of how organizations succeed or fail. It is also useful for managers, security professionals, and process improvement practitioners who want a blunt, memorable way to spot vulnerabilities in bureaucracy, meetings, communication, and decision rights. The benefit to a reader's life is not in copying its wartime intent, but in recognizing how fragile productivity can be when routines drift toward delay, overcaution, and unclear responsibility. By seeing inefficiency as something that can be engineered, you become better at designing teams and workflows that resist it. Compared with many modern business titles that wrap similar observations in motivational framing, this manual is unusually direct and systematic. Its age is a strength. It strips the subject down to fundamentals and shows that the same failure modes recur across eras and industries. It is worth buying because it offers both a historical artifact and a practical checklist for diagnosing organizational drag. Read thoughtfully. It can sharpen your ability to build resilient processes, run cleaner meetings, and protect coordination from the slow creep of needless complexity. If you would like to support United States Office of Strategic Services, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.